those of you know, these live teachings are recorded, and so I have to check the levels here, and we rebroadcast them later this evening, about 2 hours from now. Okay. Now, as I do at the beginning of every class, I recite the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead, so please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you are close who has passed away. In doing so, you will honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. And I just might mention that I've had people from time to time new to the class have come in and said, oh, wait a minute, what are you doing, doing a Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead? You don't have a minyan and this and that. You can only recite that. The rabbis tell us you can only recite that. And well, let me just make this clear. This is not the study of Talmud. This is not, I'm not a rabbi, I'm a Rebbe. And this is mysticism. This is not Orthodox Halakha, okay? You can get that from any number of rabbis, but you can get true Kabbalah only from a few people. And so what you're going to hear today is Kabbalah, and we do things in mysticism that are much, much different from Orthodox learning in yeshiva and the learning of Talmud, whether it's in groups or individually. We do things much, much differently than the rabbis. And that doesn't mean they're wrong. It doesn't mean we're wrong, or vice versa, right or right. It's a different part of Judaism that's very ancient. And in fact, all it goes back to the oral Torah that was given to Moshe on Har Sinai. And so it's more ancient, actually, than the rabbis. So our tradition is actually older than the rabbis, who can trace theirs only to the Tanaic and Amoritic periods just after the destruction of the first and second temples. So Jewish mysticism is much older than the rabbinic study of Talmud and Halakha. All right, so you may run into things that we do that are different than you used to. So don't prejudge that as being an error. All right, now for the Kaddish of the dead and the mourners of the dead. This too is a mystical thing which we do to honor our ancestors who have in fact who make up our DNA and whose memories are in our DNA, and we are indeed the culmination of all of our ancestors, those who have walked this spiritual path before us. And so we honor them by reciting the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead each day at the beginning of our shiur. All right. Yiskadal v'yishkadash merabo, bolmo dive ro kirase, v'yamlik malkase, makayakon uvimakon uvkaya dekol beis Yisrael, ba'agalo uvizman koryev ve'imru, amen. Yehesh merabo mavorak, le'alam ome omao, yisparak v'yistavak v'yisparar v'yisramam, v'yisnase v'yishadar v'yisale v'yishalal, Shmedu kacho beraku laelo minko berkaso vesheroso tush bekoso venekamoso da amiron beomo veimru omein. Yehe shlomo rabo min shamayo vekayim olenu veyalko yisrael veimru omein. O se shalom bimramov hu yashe shalom olenu veyalko yisrael veimru omein. Thank you very much. Find my place in my notes here. Long way down my page here. Where is it at? All right, here we are. Okay, and just one moment for another bit of administrative duties here. Okay, we've got everybody red dotted and right? Invite just a few more people who I know are online. All right, let's get on with this sharing. In our last few classes, we've been discussing what God said to Moses as he stood before the divine fire that was burning in but not consuming the thorn bush up on Mount Horeb. That's God's mountain out in the middle of the wilderness, which is known later on in Exodus as Har Sinai. It's the same mountain, the same place. I've had people ask me that. So God's mountain is variously named in different parts of the Bible, different names. Mount Horeb and Mount Sinai come to my mind right now. So there was Moses standing before the divine fire that burned in but did not consume the thorn bush. And when he asked God, "What name should I tell the people?" is the name of the God who sent me to bring them out of Egypt. And God said and exclaimed, "Ahaya Asher Ahaya," which, as I said before, is translated usually in most Bible translations, most translations as "I am that I am." But more literally, I believe, is more accurate mystically. And so I translate it as, "I am, blessed am I." Asher means blessed, or happy is another word for it. But in the context in which God's saying this here, it's blessed. So it's, "I am, blessed am I." Now, it's a pretty strange thing to say about what one's name is. And we all know, of course, those of us who study Kabbalah, that God has many names. Not only dozens, not only scores, but many, many names. In fact, the longest name of God is the Torah itself, the written Torah, which has 660,000 words to it, letters to it. A letter for each of the 660,000 Israelites who camped at the base of Har Sinai when Moshe went up onto the mountain, called by God, went into the cloud, clothed himself in the cloud, and spoke with God, and God gave him the testimony, the covenant, the Torah. Each letter in that Torah that God gave to Moshe represents a letter for each one of the Israelites camped at the base. Now, what does this mean? What this means is that this allowed each a personal relationship between each of the Israelites with the Torah. They could each one of them claim that the Torah was specific to them because each had a specific letter in the Torah that was theirs. Now, whether they knew that or not, I don't know, but we are also taught that the Shekinah prior to the sin of the golden calf had descended upon and was amongst all of the 660,000 of the Israelites. So the Shekinah, God's divine presence, was upon all of the Israelites that were gathered at the base of the mountain. But then there was the sin of the golden calf, and the Shekinah departed from the presence of the Israelites. And God, who had designed the Torah prior to the creation of the world, prior to the creation of mankind, prior to the existence of the Israelites, had made the Torah so that each letter could be claimed in ownership for each one of the 660,000 Israelites, took back that Torah, took it back, and said, "They are not worthy of this, Moshe. And now go down and take care of what's going on with the golden calf." And then other things happened, and I'm not going to go into those things, but this Torah that was given was originally given to all of the Israelites, then was taken back. God tried to give it to the other nations of the world. They would not accept the terms and conditions, namely that they'd have to give up certain vices that they used to get ahead in the world, such as the people, the descendants of Esau, would have to give up murder killing of others in order to gain their property and gain power over others, the Ishmaelites would have to give up the sin of deception in their business dealings. And none of them wanted to give this up. They said, yeah, we'd be happy to take the Torah, but we don't want to give these things up. So God found that none of them were worthy either. So when Moshe went back up the mountain, he said, will the Israelites accept my Torah? Will they follow its commandments? And Moshe made this well-known statement in which he said, they will do and they will listen. Not they will listen and they will do, but they will do and they will listen. This is a reversed order to our normal ways of thinking. One cannot do unless one hears what it is that God or Moshe wants you to do, right? But that's not what Moshe said to God. He said they will do and they will listen. And what he meant by this was it was a form of hyperbole that showed to God that not only would they listen and do, but more than that, they would do first before questioning anything, before even considering. So whatever God's commandments were, they would immediately put into effect. So with that, God gave Moshe the second version of the Torah. And this one, instead of writing with his own fingernail, he dictated to Moshe. It took 40 days and 40 nights, and includes more than the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, and includes also the Oral Torah. And it's more than the first five books, the Pentateuch. It's the Oral Torah also, which is the subject largely of the Talmud. All right, now with that background, God says to Moshe at the burning bush, Ahaya Asher Ahaya, I am, blessed am I. Now, we pointed out the fact in our last shiur that this three-word statement is a palindrome. That is, it reads exactly the same forward and backward. So if you write down in the English, I am, blessed am I, you will see that it reads exactly the same. Just as if you write down the Hebrew, Ahaya Asher Ahaya. The three words are the same, whether you read it from right to left or left to right. So it's a palindrome. This sameness has a mystical significance. It indicates God's perfection in himself and tells us that he has no need to change. Somebody just prior to class was in a private message was asking me about this. What do we mean that we repair God? God is perfect. God doesn't need any repair. Yes and no. Ein Sof is perfection, but Ein Sof is the hidden God. Ein Sof needed to create. So in his perfection, he also has imperfection, because perfection implies completeness. And if God were incomplete, that would imply perfection. So God has to be complete, but that also means that there are things that he needs to do. And the evidence for this is not my saying. It is the fact that God, in the form of Ein Sof, desired to create. If God was totally, totally perfect, that is not to imply that he has no needs. Okay? To say that God is perfect does not imply that he has no needs. One of his needs was to share his perfection and his goodness with someone, with an other, in psychological terms. Okay? God had to share his goodness with someone, so he created mankind, and he created a world and a universe to sustain and serve mankind. But he placed into that universe all kinds of negative things as well as positive things. Now, where did these negative things come from? There is nothing that was not in God. There is nothing that was not in God, whether it's in the form of potentiality or in the form of God's thoughts or in the form of actuality as God made it. So in other words, for there to be evil and darkness in this world, just as there is to be light, or excuse me, goodness and light in this world. It all comes from the same source. God is the source of everything. There is nothing that exists outside of God unless you don't believe in monotheism. Now, if you want to believe there are many gods, or that there is a supreme God and then there are subordinate gods, then you can go practice all kinds of paganist religions. They exist all over the world, if that's what you want to practice. But if you claim to be a monotheist, that is, you are either a Jew, a Christian, or a Muslim, then you have to believe in the core bedrock principle that we are taught in Torah, and that is God is one. Shema Yisrael. Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. God, the Hero Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. So that is the core fundamental discovery, the greatest discovery in all of the existence of the world that man has made. And Avraham is the one who made that, the father of all these religions. He is the one who discovered that God is one. There aren't many gods. God is not supreme over many gods. There's only one God. And that includes when we talk about the incarnation of evil. Samael or Hasatan. Hasatan only means the adversary in Hebrew. Samael is based on Hebrew words that mean the blind God. Samael. Sami meaning blind, El, God. God in his blindness. Yes, God in his blindness. Because all things that have been created came from God, and therefore they existed in potentiality in Ein Sof. And God determined to bring them into the world and to give them as traits to mankind. That's what God means in Genesis 1:26. When he says, let us make man in our image. In our image, let us make him. And in 27, when he says, I just have it right here, pretty close here. So God created man in his own image, and the image of God created him. Male and female, he created them. It doesn't mean just a physical image. Or do you really think that God has a physical body? If you do, then all of these rabbis, which some of you cling to so desperately as being the supreme font of all knowledge about God, and they themselves would accuse you of blasphemy and heresy. God does not have a physical body. God is a spirit. God is an unknown force. Okay, Ein Sof is completely transcendent. Physicality, temporality, materiality, none of that existed until God's breath hovered over the waters. And he said, let there be light. Not until then did anything come into existence. Anything physical. So it's impossible for God to have had a physical body prior to the creation of the world. Now there is a second God that is not transcendent. And that's the immanent God. It's the same God as the first God. God is one. What these are is in the diagram, God does have a body. It's a supernal form and image. A supernal form and image of God, and it's called the tree of the ten holy sephirot, or the Etz Chaim, the tree of life. The tree of life. And it's the ten sephirot, the ten attributes of God. Starting at the top with the crown, Keter, going down to Chokhmah, wisdom, Binah, understanding. Chesed, loving kindness. Gevurah, strength. And then on down to the sixth one, which is Teferet. And I'll come back to that in a second. Teferet, meaning beauty. Teferet Yisrael, the beauty of Israel. And then down to Netzah, endurance. Hod, victory. Yesod, foundation. Foundation of the world. Foundation of all the supernal worlds. Yesod. Zadi is another name. Zadik, excuse me. Is another one, okay? The righteous one, okay? And then below that is Malkut, Malkut is the kingdom. So we start at the top with Keter Elyon, which is the crown most high, and God manifests himself in a zigzag pattern that I just described to you, like a lightning strike, coming from on high down to ever lower realms of existence, until finally he manifests himself in the kingdom of God, which is Malkut. And that's also known as Shekinah, which is God's feminine divine presence. Okay, now I said that there's a second type of God here. The first type of God isn't even in this tree. The first type of God is Ein Sof, the unknown hidden God, the unmoved mover, the uncreated creator. He cannot be known, he can never be seen, none of the laws of physics apply to God, and we can know nothing about God. All we can know about that God, that Ein Sof, which means, literally, Ein means without, Sof means end, all we can know are the things that God is not. Okay? But that's not true of God, the manifest God. God who manifests himself in the universe, in the let's put it this way, in this order, in the supernal worlds, in the world of the throne, in the world of the angels, and in the world of action, as you come down in those four worlds. Right in the center of all that is the sixth Sephirah. And I'm hoping that you know that you have a diagram of the ten holy Sephirot, of the Etzkayim, the Tree of Life. Because what I teach on, it always comes back to this. It always comes back to this. And as all Kabbalah is centered around the Ten Sephirot, which is what? It's God's manifestation through stages into this world, going from being completely transcendent to being partially accessible in this world. Imminent, let's put it that way, imminent. Holy transcendent in Ein Sof to imminent in where? In the beauty of Israel, in Teferet Yisrael, the sixth Sephirah, which is also known as the Holy King Messiah. Okay, HaKodesh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, the Creator of heaven and earth. This is the God who creates. This is the God who hears and wants to hear our prayers. Ein Sof doesn't hear our prayers. Our prayers don't reach Ein Sof. Ein Sof's totally transcendent. That's the meaning of transcendent. Unreachable. Outside this dimension. Outside the dimensions of physicality and temporality. Time and space and matter do not apply to Ein Sof. But they do apply to HaKodesh Baruch Hu, Melka Kedisha HaMashiach, which is represented by Sephirah number 6, Tiferet. Okay? And that is the God to whom we pray. That is the God who listens to us. That is the God to whom we seek to cleave in Devakut, which means communion with God. Okay? And so... That's what I mean when I say that God is both perfect and imperfect, both complete and incomplete, because if he was totally complete, he would have no needs to do anything. He would feel no needs. So God, Ein Sof, was incomplete, at least in the sense, at least hear me out before you just decide that I'm a raving maniac here, a blasphemer, a heretic. Although I don't really care if you think I'm a heretic, but I'm just dispensing. I'm like a pop machine, okay? you put a quarter in the machine, and well, I guess nowadays you put a dollar and a half in the machine, and out comes a can of pop. And you either like it and drink it and like it and come back and get another one, or you don't. That's how it works. I'm just a dispenser here of information. Okay, so if you don't agree with it, you don't have to come back, and if you do, you can stay, and good. All right, so God had this need when I say God, I'm talking about himself, had a need. He had a need to share his goodness with an other. Because God in Ein Sof is coextensive within himself and everywhere. There's nothing. There is nowhere, in fact. And there is no past, present, or future. It's only an eternal present. That's all. That's really what reality is this eternal present that is experienced by Ein Sof. We don't get to experience it because on our level of creation, things have a beginning, a present, and an end. Okay, so everything God made came out of God's mind, out of Ein Sof's divine mind. And so God is the author of evil as well as the author of good. And it is the theology of Sabbatean post-Lurianic Kabbalah that God, in creating the world, desired to do two things. He desired to make an other with which he could share his perfect goodness. And the second thing was that he could shed his undifferentiated evil, the darkness that was in potentia in Ein Sof. If it wasn't there, it couldn't come into existence. It was there in the form of a thought, or it was in the form of opposition. And we see this because when God started to bring himself into manifestation, what's the first thing that pops out after Keter? Look at your diagram of the Ten Sephirot. You see that the emanation goes from there in a right side to a left side, back to a right side, back to a left side, down through the middle, right side, left side, down to the middle, and down to the middle again. So what happens is you have three columns of attributes that are emanated. You have a right-hand side, a left-hand side, and a middle side. And if you look at those attributes, you'll see that the right-hand side is the opposite of the left-hand side and vice versa. So God emanated himself. All the supernal worlds themselves are a combination of opposites. All God's attributes, God is the origin of all opposites, and all of his attributes that are manifest, okay, the ones that are, that means differentiated. That's the difference between Ein Sof that's transcendent, is all of these attributes existed in him, but they were all blended and mixed up. They were not yet differentiated. So one of God's purposes in making the universe and mankind and all living creatures in it was to differentiate within himself, to differentiate the opposites, and then to do what? Well, the answer to that is in the center column. That's the column of reconciliation. So, for instance, if you look at the fourth sephirot, and you have chesed, and the fifth, which is loving kindness, and you have the left-hand side, its opposite, which is anger, wrath, din means strict judgment. Okay, you have like on the right-hand side another name for chesed is mercy. So you have mercy on the right hand of God, and on the left hand of God you have strict judgment. In the word din, D-I-N, another name for gevurah. And so these are opposites. These are opposites between the right and the left-hand sides. Up above that, you have chokmah, which is the male attribute. The whole right-hand column is male. It's partsuf, which means hidden personality or countenance, which this comes from Lurianic Kabbalah. Its hidden personality is named Abba, which means father. And on the left-hand side, in opposition, is Bina, understanding, but its partsuf, its hidden personality, its name, is Ima, mother. So you have the divine father and the divine mother. And through their union is emanated all the other seven below. All the other seven below. And that's called Zer-Anpin. Okay? So what it is God, his second purpose, and just as important as the first purpose, like one and two, we don't need to number them because that's deceiving. It tends to get us thinking in terms of priority. These were equal priorities in Ein Sof's mind, to both create an other with which God could share his perfect goodness, and secondly, to precipitate out of his, out of its undifferentiated potentiality within his transcendent self, Ein Sof, to precipitate out of that and manifest into the world of temporality and physicality, where they would not last forever, where they would no longer be eternal, where they would be only temporary, because that's what the world, that's what all of the lower worlds are. They are creations of God, and therefore they last, their existence is contingent upon Ein Sof's continued desire for them to exist. And as soon as God's purposes have been accomplished, then he will cease to desire their continued existence, and it will all evaporate, just be gone. Just be all rolled up, taken back into Ein Sof. That's the ultimate fate of everything, is everything will return to its origin in Ein Sof. And so God precipitated out into the world of temporality, time, the world of time, where everything has a beginning, endures, exists for a period, and then has an end. He wanted to precipitate out all of these attributes. And then he commands us to make out of evil that which is good. This is a teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. To make out of evil that which is good. To, as Job is said to have done, to eschew evil and to adhere to righteousness. Job, who was the most righteous man on the earth at the time. Okay, so that's what God wants us to do. And so, yes, God, as he's manifest through the universe, through the supernal worlds, and the universe is imperfect. Because God is this array, and you look at the diagram of the ten sephirot, they are in the form of an array of three columns. And on one side's all of the holy affirming aspects of God. See how they're all life-affirming and loving and endurance and all of these things. And on the left-hand side, they're all restricting, the holy denying aspect of God. So you have on the right the holy affirming aspect, and on the left the holy denying. And those are in opposition. They're in eternal conflict. As Jung, the great, up till the middle, well, late, well, early first half of the 20th century psychologist, and who was really more of a theologian and an avatar, an epical man, as he was to say, he was to call that the conflictio oppositorum, the conflict in Latin, the conflict of the opposites. And what is the center column? It's the reconciliation, the holy reconciling. And that makes sense, doesn't it? What is another name for Malkah Kedisha HaMashiach, the sixth sephirot? Notice how all the paths except for one run into the sixth sephirah, Tiferet, Yisrael. Who's the God of Israel? The God of Israel is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Holy Blessed One. He's the Holy King Messiah. And another name for that sixth sephirah is Shalom, peace. For we are told, and I can't give you the exact Bible verse on this at the moment off the top of my head, but we are told, and he makes peace upon his heights. He makes peace upon the heights. Well, what are the heights? What's above Shalom? What's above that is the opposites of above. It's Hesed versus Gevura, Hesed versus Din. And what he does is he reconciles them in him. Shalom. He makes peace. So philosophically or metaphysically speaking, what you have here that's been emanated by Ein Sof into the form of the universe and in the form of man, because we are the same on the inside, because God made us in his image, okay, and in his likeness. We share these attributes, okay? So what the philosophers call that is they call it thesis. That's the right-hand column, thesis, spelled T as in Tom, H-E-S-I-S. And the left-hand column is antithesis or antithesis, okay? That means the thing that opposes the thesis. Okay, so you've got the arguments for and the arguments against. And there's this dialectic. That's the conflict, conflictio oppositorum of Jung, the conflict in the form of dialectic between the two forces, the wholly affirming, the wholly denying. And they're reconciled in the creation of a third, which is synthesis. All right, then let me check my time here. It's about all we have time for. Wasn't exactly what I was going to teach, what I planned to teach on today, but the Bat-Kol came over me, the Ruach HaKodesh, and said, "No, I had this person private message you and bring up this subject because I want this subject to be discussed today." And so we taught on that, and it was a little choppy. I asked you to look beyond that because I had no notes for this. I just did all of this as it was given to me to say by the Bat-Kol. All right, well, that's going to be all for today. Now, on our next meeting on Wednesday, I intend to get back onto what I plan to teach today, and that is discussing this Ahaya Usher Ahaya and what it means from the fact that it's a palindrome, and how mankind is a reflection of HaKodesh Baruch Hu, or the Tetragrammaton. Okay, so well, you won't be doing that today. We'll be taking that up on Wednesday, and as I said earlier, all these live teachings are recorded, and I save them on our website as MP3 files, so you can download them. And let me give you the address of our website for any who are interested. Okay, so you can go there and you can find the audio archives and find any of these lectures, and then there's a rebroadcast. Since this is recorded, there's a rebroadcast tonight for people who it's inconvenient to come at this time slot, and that is at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific. So if this isn't a convenient time, you can always come to the rebroadcast. Okay, our next class will be at the same time on Wednesday. I teach every Monday and Wednesday. Then every first and third Erev Shabbats, I do a Shabbat worship service. Actually, it's a Shabbos table, and I invite you to come to that, and I do the Kiddush and the Motzi, and we share our food, and we in virtual space and time, we share our food and worship and praise God together. And there's a short teaching each day, too. All right. Until next time, I ask that God's blessing be upon you, and I remind you to remember God at least twice each day, and until we meet again, go from strength to strength, be strong, Zeigesund.